People reporting their own news directly without the need for reporters, bypassing the corporate media.
There are 100 indie media or IMC websites worldwide providing grassroots reports of struggles, campaigns and protests.
There are so many people here who are saying no to the government today, and this is democracy in action.
Everybody's here. Everybody in the country seems to be here. They're just coming from all over the place. The banners are showing all the tiny, tiny little pockets of the country. Everybody has come down.
The project started 3 years ago covering the massive Seattle protests which shut down the World Trade Organization summit.
Uncensored and unsponsored, IMC sites can be updated anywhere, anytime, by anyone.
The open to all nature of these sites means that you can publish your own reports about your own issues and at the same time connect to a global network of grassroots news. What you are about to hear are some highlights from these global websites and from our very own UK IMC Wire. For more information or to get the news direct from the streets, check out www.indymedia.org.uk.
The world is waking outside my window. Bella ciao, bella ciao, bella ciao, ciao, ciao. Drags my senses into the sunlight, for there are things that I must do. Wish me luck now, I have to leave you. Bella ciao, bella ciao, bella ciao, ciao, ciao. With my friends now, up to the city, we're gonna shake the gates of hell. And I will tell them, we will tell them. Ciao, bella, ciao, bella, ciao, ciao, ciao. That our sunlight is not for franchise, and wish the bastards drop down dead. Next time you see me, I may be smiling. Bella, ciao, bella, ciao, bella, ciao, ciao, ciao. I'll be in prison or on the TV.
Hello and welcome to the show. It's the 18th of August. You're listening to Indie Media Radio London on Resonance FM 104.4. This week's we've got the normal mix of highlights from the Indie Media news wires around the world. And we start off with a story that's been covered in the UK and on some of the other indie medias around the world.
Union condemns Israeli treatment of journalist. The National Union of Journalists has condemned the Israeli government for its treatment of journalist Ever Jazovich. Ever Jazovich landed at Tel Aviv airport last Wednesday and was detained by the authorities, who claim she is a political activist and that her reporting would not be objective. She was interrogated by defence ministry officials for 7 hours. They told her that she would be deported on Sunday morning, but she decided to appeal against this. Ever Jazovich, who is a correspondent for the British left-wing magazine Red Pepper, is being detained in prison pending an appeal hearing later today. National Union of Journalists freelance organiser John Toner said Ever Jazovich is a bona fide journalist who has travelled to Israel to research a story. She holds an NUJ press card and an IFJ international press card, and it is outrageous that she should be treated this way. It is not acceptable that a supposedly democratic country should refuse entry to a journalist because they find her work objectionable. This amounts to state censorship. We call on the UK government to intervene. Ever Jazovich has done quite a lot of work in Israel in the past. While she was in Israel before, she was doing a lot of reporting on the treatment of children by the IDF. We now have an audio report about what happened last time she was there.
Ever Jazovich is a campaigning journalist on assignment currently in Israel for Red Pepper. On her way into Tel Aviv airport, she was denied entry into Israel. Ever has worked in Israel before as a journalist and as a campaigning journalist about the treatment of the Palestinian people by the Israeli Defence Forces in the West Bank. Last time she was in Israel, Bahar Albash, a 14-year-old boy, was shot dead by Israeli soldiers from APC. Ever, we think, possibly has been denied entry because at the time she witnessed this killing and was on Israeli television. I'm here with Paul Troop, who at the time was working for a non-governmental organisation called called Al Qanun, which is like a kind of law centre, how the law centre works in the UK here today. What happened? How did you come to be involved in this?
Well, one of the things that the NGO that I was working for was doing was collecting statements from people that witnessed incidents such as the death of Bahal Bash in Nablus in that time. And by chance, I was in the country when a number of English-speaking internationals witnessed, well, they were standing by Baha, just walking down the street when he was shot by an APC. And because I spoke English, obviously, it was easier for me to take the statements from the few people who saw the incident. I interviewed each of the witnesses separately, and all of them said, in effect, that they were being shown around by a 14-year-old boy around the city of Nablus. At the time, there was no militant activity whatsoever. There wasn't even any stone throwing. There was a tank and an armoured personnel carrier, APC, in the area. They were on the same street as both of them. The APC turned off, and it was probably between 100 and 200 metres away. One of the soldiers fired a single shot at Baha, and it killed him. That's, in summary, what happened.
Was there any kind of investigation?
Well, two different NGOs asked for an investigation. The one I worked for, Al Qanun, and also an Israeli NGO called Pakati, the Public Committee Against Torture in Israel. Pakati particularly raised it because in the same week there had been a number of children killed, and they asked for an investigation into why they were killed. I was provided later with translations of what had happened. Initially, the BBC reported there was going to be an investigation by, I think, a major general from the Israeli army. I wasn't aware of whether that happened or not. I was aware of, initially, I was informed by colleagues at Pakati that the Israeli military prosecutor or investigator initially claimed to Pakati that all of the individuals who they were investigating or asking to be investigated were in fact still alive. Clearly none of them were still alive, and there were death certificates to show each of them had been killed. But it does question the investigation, the quality of the investigation that was or was not carried out. Subsequently, after the death certificates were provided, there was apparently some further questioning going on, and the response from the military prosecutor's office was that they had decided not to open a criminal investigation. And the basis of that was that shots were being fired, and the individual concerned was throwing a Molotov cocktail towards the APC. That was, to my awareness and from the people I spoke to, that was clearly not true. And an individual with a Molotov cocktail would have been a long distance away from the APC and would have been no threat whatsoever to it. But that wasn't the case. There was no firing going on. There was no shooting. There was not even any stone throwing at the time. So I don't know how they came to the conclusions that they did not to open an investigation, but they weren't based on the facts as I understood them to be.
And Ever was a witness?
Ever was one of the witnesses. I don't believe the military asked or even tried to get in contact with any of the witnesses who were there at the time. Ever was one of the people who saw what had happened.
And Ever was on Israeli television at the time describing the situation?
As I understand it, yes. She agreed to go on an Israeli television show, talk about the case. They asked her what she'd seen and what had happened, and she gave an explanation. As I understand it, that's from talking to her. I never saw it on the television, though.
Yeah, because I understand she was stopped at the airport by one of the people who remembered her from being on television.
Right, well, I don't know that. I've no idea why she was stopped. I know she has been detained and refused entry, but I didn't know it was on the basis that she'd been recognised from television.
You also mentioned to me that the Bar Human Rights Committee wrote to the Israeli military.
Yeah, the Bar Human Rights Committee is the committee from the Bar of England and Wales, and it's interested in promoting the rule of law and human rights, particularly for lawyers in the world. They wrote a letter because they were concerned about what had happened, and in particular the lack of investigation.
I think this has to be seen against the wider picture in the occupied territories, where in particular children are getting killed and very seriously injured on a very, very regular basis. And there have been numerous, lots of evidence to show that the culture of impunity and the lack of investigations into each death does contribute to further deaths in the future. And against that background, the Bar Human Rights Committee wrote a letter asking what investigation there had been into this death, because they were particularly interested in it. To my knowledge, and as a member, I'm not aware of a response being received from the military.
Do you think there could be any way to go with the International Courts of Justice? Could there be any appeal?
Legally, it's very, very difficult, the International Criminal Court. To have jurisdiction, Israel would need to sign up to it, and that's something which they haven't done. In theory, under universal jurisdiction, individual states could prosecute people who commit grave breaches of the Geneva Conventions, but that's a very unlikely situation, and I'm not aware of it happening very, very often at all. It's very rare.
With Bahar's family, have they received any kind of apology from the Israeli state that you're aware of?
I don't know. The one time that I met with them was shortly after Bahar's death. Obviously at the time it was very shortly after his funeral, and they were very upset. I don't know what contact they've had from either Bekati or Al-Qarnoon or from the Israeli military. What I can say, though, was at the time they were very, very grateful for the international support and assistance and the interest that people had shown in what had happened to their son. Deva was one of the people who was in Nablus at the time and was reporting what was going on and providing information to the outside world. And that, at the very least, is very, very important for Palestinians under occupation in very difficult circumstances.
So this could have had an effect on our entry, possibly?
It's a possibility. I really couldn't answer that question there.
Okay, thank you very much.
Okay, we have here a letter that Enat Ron, Lieutenant Colonel of the Israeli Defence Force, sent to Miss Hannah Freedom of the Public Committee Against Torture in Israel in response to the death of Bahar Saeed al-Bash. It says here, re-circumstances of the death of Bahar Saeed al-Bash, age 14, on the 22nd of the 9th, 02 in Nablus. Yours, complaint regarding the killing of 6 Palestinian civilians, among them 4 minors, the week of the 19th of the 22nd of the 9th 2002, and this is the letter dated on the 29th of the 9th 02. After looking into the matter in question, it transpires that on the 22nd of September 2002, an IDF unit was conducting a vehicular patrol in Nablus while the city was under curfew. During the patrol, several shots were fired at the force from an unidentified source. In response, the commander of the unit fired towards a protective well. Moreover, from our examination, it transpires that additional shots fired by the unit were directed at a protective well on the mountain's nib in response to disturbances that were taking place. The unit continued moving, while all along its path, stones and other objects, including a Molotov cocktail which hit the APC, were thrown at them. The patrol later identified a teenager who had thrown a Molotov cocktail at the unit and vanished into one of the alleyways. Seconds later, the same teenager was spotted holding a Molotov cocktail, ready to throw it. Therefore, the patrol fired shots at him. Although no clear answer was found to the question from what fire the deceased in question was hit by, it was decided that due to the circumstances of the shooting that took place, i.e. in response to the danger the unit was in, it's not open to a criminal investigation in the matter. Regards, Enat Ron, Lieutenant Colonel, Chief Military Prosecutor. Now, as you can see, we were talking to Barrister Paul Troop just earlier, and he mentioned that there are a number of witnesses to the death of Bahar, and this letter just shows that investigations into the deaths of Palestinian children are not being thoroughly followed through. Eva, who's currently in detention, is being prevented from entering into Israel to write an article for Red Pepper, as we've already said. And she's being prevented because she witnessed this event 2 years ago. So if anybody would like to write letters, please contact the National Union of Journalists to offer any support for Eva Jasevich. Thank you.
The juices let loose the vision void. Blood suckle and honey suck. Oh, Rose, thou art sick. Oh, the vision and void. The blood sickle cuts. And little children's heavy heads. My dreams are racked all in my bed. Innocence is dripping red. In dreams I'll walk with you. In dreams I'll talk with you. In dreams you're mine.
Functioning despite attempts to illegally evict them and being taken to court. On Wednesday the 11th of August, they went to court but managed to get the case adjourned for 7 days due to the confusion about who really owns the premises. Use Your Love has been squatted since early 2002, run by a locally based collective on a voluntary basis, with events, cafes, meetings, film nights, free information, music evenings and more. The 300-year-old partially listed building is allegedly owned by a property company, Glen International. In late July, the occupiers say they attempted to illegally evict them. After this failed, they took the occupiers to court to gain possession. In court, however, the occupiers questioned the status of Glen International as a legitimate company, pointing out that their claim didn't contain proper legal evidence that the solicitor's barrister had authority to act from a bona fide director. The judge agreed. He seems to have come across Glen International before and not being entirely sympathetic towards them. He adjourned the case for 7 days for them to produce a proper witness statement from a director, not the unsigned facts the barrister could muster. The case is back at Woolwich County Court today, Wednesday the 18th of August, and we'll bring you an update next week. There's a meeting at the centre tonight to discuss the outcome of the court hearing, and other events continue, including an acoustic music night on Saturday. Use Your Loaf is at 227 Deptford High Street, London SE8.
And another South London thing. St Agnes Place community near Oval, which has been under an eviction threat, is holding an arts festival this coming weekend. The whole street is becoming a gallery and a photography exhibition covering protest sites at Newbury, M11, Manchester Airport, Bilston Glen, Sherwood Forest, Nine Ladies, as well as the 30-year history of St Agnes Place, squatted community. There will be a sculpture and other art in the street, workshops, demonstrations, fire show, cyborg performance, stand-up comedy, live music on different stages, as well as tasty food. That's this Saturday and Sunday from midday each day at St Agnes Place near Oval Tube. More info from www.stagnesplace.org, and we have something fitting from the Reclaim the Streets album, The Bailiff Letter by Shut Up and Dance. We'll be right back. You're listening to Indie Media Radio London on Resonance FM 104.4. Next up, a report on a police operation that took place on Monday outside a meeting for autonomous and self-organised spaces and initiatives alongside the European Social Forum event, which will be held in London in October later this year.
Here's the text of the report uploaded to Indie Media. The Autonomous Spaces meeting for the European Social Forum had been advertised on the internet and on mailing lists as starting at 7:30 p.m. The grouping of people, organisations and networks involved in the autonomous and self-organised spaces for the ESF has been very wide, ranging from occupied social centres, the Wombles, through to academics, many involved in the ESF process, to volunteers from Indie Media, other alternative and community media groups, people from the London Social Forum, a large range of campaign groups from privacy advocates and monitoring organisations to gender groups and migrant groups, as well as creative arts, theatre, music groups, to alternative and participatory economic groups, lots of groups, and others from the social economy and sustainability sectors. A wide programming of events, meetings, presentations, discussions and film screenings is being planned for October, mostly in hired and donated venues, some also in occupied social centres. The autonomous and self-organised spaces are recognised by the main ESF process and will be listed in the actual printed programme for the ESF. Monday the 16th of August was the 6th Autonomous Spaces meeting in London, being held at the Grand Banks Occupied Social Centre opposite Tufnell Park tube station. This is the context in which the police conducted their first operation against the autonomous and self-organised spaces. Just before 7 p.m, two police officers arrived arrived outside the building. When a couple of people from inside the social centre asked what they were doing, they said they were concerned about graffiti. They then crossed the road to the tube station, where they met a sergeant from the City of London Police. Then two riot vans arrived and more police. In total, there are about 12 officers. They positioned themselves all around the road junction, along with two camera units, one with a very big telescopic lens, who then started taking pictures of anyone outside the building or entering the building. At first, two officers went and stood on the steps in front of the building, blocking the door. The sergeant was asked why they were there, and he replied, "For the meeting." He was asked if he thought that 12 officers and two vans was perhaps overkill and that maybe it could be interpreted as intimidation. He replied, "We are here to facilitate the meeting, to ensure that you have a safe meeting. It's a matter of protecting your rights. We are here to keep you safe." Other police officers were questioning people who took an interest in their presence. "Are you here for the meeting? What is your political affiliation? Which group do you belong to?" Others engaged with passers-by. The police operation looked quite large and was drawing a lot of attention. Some officers were telling people associated with the building that they were political extremists. They also tried to discourage others who said they were there to attend the meeting from going into the building. They stayed in position for around 2 hours, continuing to take pictures of anyone arriving or leaving, camera flashes illuminating the area every few seconds, others taking copious amounts of notes in their notebooks. Inside, the meeting went ahead as planned. At the end, the matter of police surveillance intimidation operation was discussed, and it was decided that it was important to hold the next meeting in the same location, both to show that people will not be intimidated and also to show the solidarity with the social centre. Next up, the text that has been published by those working on the autonomous and self-organised spaces.
This is a text that's been produced by multiple networks and multiple groups, and it does goes a little way to explain their position and some of the things they are planning to do. So we shall read it out now. "We are a loose network of individuals, groups, organisations and grassroots communities who act, think and struggle for another world beyond capitalism. We write this call to those in the UK and the rest of Europe to participate in building alternative autonomous spaces around the European Social Forum, which will be held in London during October. That's the 14th to 17th of October. We want to create open spaces for networking, exchanges, celebration and action. We believe our ways of organising and acting should reflect our political visions and are united in standing for grassroots self-organisation, horizontality, for diversity and inclusion, for direct democracy, collective decision-making based upon consensus, and against the false consensus in which power is used to silence others. Now, the text goes on to explain their position towards the European Social Forum, and it seems they don't have any single position. The text goes on to say, "We do not have nor represent one single unified position on the ESF. We are, however, all united in the knowledge that the ESF UK organising process is non-transparent, non-participatory and exclusionary. The UK ESF organising process has essentially been controlled by the hierarchical and authoritarian Socialist Workers' Party, Socialist Action and through the central involvement of Mayor Ken Livingstone's Greater London Authority. Because the organising process and methodology in the UK and at the European level has not reflected the values and charters which the ESF aspires to, they say the ESF process is politically bankrupt. However, they're at pains to state that they recognise and value and support the energy, diversity and of experiences of those who will be attending the ESF in October. Now, the ESF in October is probably going to have around 20,000 participants and will be based both at Alexandra Palace in the north of London and in multiple sites across the Bloomsbury area. That's from King's Cross south towards Holborn. The statement goes on to say, "It is important to say that some of us have tried to work inside the ESF process, fighting to democratise the ESF, and as such, much of our criticism is born from experience. Some of us believe that it is possible to rebuild the ESF to make it closer to the ideals it claims. However, others, after their experience, believe this is simply not possible. Further still, some of us wish to go further and say that the entire basis of the ESF is illegitimate and that it only represents a space for the co-option of struggles and as such it should be opposed." So it's clear that the groups working in the autonomous and self-organised spaces have a variety of different groups, of different views and different political positions, but they are all united in trying to organise together. The information goes on to say there are now several self-organised and autonomous spaces under construction. An alternative programme of events will cover such areas as asylum issues, alternative media, technologies of control from copyright to biometric ID cards, the G8 which comes to the UK next year in 2005 and much more. There'll be film screenings, alternative media centres, street theatre, parties, creative actions and protests. And for more information on this, you can check out the Alternative Spaces website, and that's at www.altspaces.net. That's altspaces.net. And for more on the ESF process itself, there's two websites to check out. There's the official website, which is fse-esf.org, and there's the unofficial open website, which is esf2004.net. And you'll be hearing a lot more as the event gets closer. We're 8 weeks away now from the event, and as said, it'll probably attract at least 20,000 participants, so expect to hear a lot more in the coming weeks here on Indie Media, and no doubt in the national press too.
There's something happening here, what it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop, children. What's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. There's battle lines being drawn. Nobody's right if everybody's wrong. Young people speak in their minds are getting so much resistance from behind. Time we stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down.
cars and people in the street, singing songs and a carry inside, mostly say hooray for our side. It's time we stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Paranoia strikes deep into your life, it will creep. It starts when you're always afraid. Step out of line, the man come and take you away. You better stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. You better stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. You better stop now, what's that sound?
Up the Clyde, 2004, big blockade of Faslane. Stop laughing at me. I'll start again, shall I? Monday, 23rd of August, sees the carry-on up the Clyde. 2004, big blockade of Faslane submarine base. Faslane, 30 miles from Glasgow in Scotland, is the base of Britain's Trident nuclear missile submarines, carrying nuclear weapons with a destructive power equal to 1,000 Hiroshimas. And if you remember, last week was the anniversary of Nagasaki. Over the past few years, there have been a series of mass, non-violent but disruptive direct actions at Faslane and Coalport nuclear weapons bases on the Clyde, under the title "The Big Blockade." Those events draw a diversity of people from all over the world, including lots of young people, church representatives, and politicians. Many being arrested for trying to uphold international law and stop Trident. This year's mass event, to be held on the 23rd, will include a mass blockade aimed at shutting the base, though organisers are also encouraging other forms of peaceful direct action. The campaigners say, Trident is illegal under international law because it would kill millions of civilians. The manufacture of Trident pollutes the environment with deadly radiation, and also that Trident takes millions of pounds away from housing, hospitals and schools. At the same time, an international disarmament camp will be held at Coalport, running from the 18th of August to the 1st of September. For more information, see www.tridentplowshares.org.
In related news, various groups in Brighton have been protesting against local arms dealers, EDO MBM. Amongst other things, they make release mechanisms which attach and release bombs on F-16s, Hawks and Tornadoes. The company has publicly admitted that their products, manufactured in Brighton, have been used in Iraq, and campaigners believe they may be indirectly supplied to Israel for use against the Palestinians. Actions taken already include shutting the factory down for a day with a roadblock and rooftop occupation. From Sunday the 29th of August till Thursday the 2nd of September, a local peace camp will be set up in Brighton with workshops and protests planned throughout the 5 days.
Last Friday, a protest was held against anti-terror policing outside the Home Office at Queen Anne's Gate in London. The protest was organised by the Stop Police Terror Group against the victimisation of the Muslim community under anti-terror policing laws, and included the Campaign Against Criminalising Communities, the Muslim Public Affairs Committee, the Islamic Human Rights Commission, and speakers included Dr. Siddiqui, leader of the Muslim Parliament, Bruce Kent from CND, and speakers from the Institute of Race Relations and the Stop the War Coalition. Over 450 demonstrators lined the pavement outside the Home Office for a dignified and peaceful demonstration. Also amongst those speaking were Yvonne Ridley, who spoke of the injustice and terrorism of the Muslim community, terrorisation, I should say, of the Muslim community, which is being committed by the British and American government, and how British Muslim leaders need to wake up to the trials being faced by British Muslims instead of, as they say, having tea and cake with the British government representatives. a retired civil servant and father of Barbar Ahmed, one of the people under detention, made an emotional appeal outlining how he had served the British government and people, and how he, as a father, had raised his children to be just and law-abiding. He then went on to explain how he thought that his son was being made a scapegoat for the American war-hungry administration. Demonstrators held up placards calling for British justice, not American injustice, and for the release of Barbar Ahmed. For more information on this, see www.stoppoliceterror.com.
The National Front had planned to visit Oakington Asylum Seeker Reception Centre on Saturday to protest against asylum seekers. In response to this, 50 anti-fascist protesters turned out at Oakington to, quote, show that the people of Cambridge have no interest in the politics of hate. The National Front, however, failed to show up, and instead around a dozen National Front supporters gave out leaflets in the centre of the town, marching from Regent Street to the train station. When the anti-fascist campaigners at Oakington heard the National Front supporters were leafleting in the town, they decided to return there. However, most were prevented from getting near to the National Front supporters by the police. One report on Indie Media says more than 50 people gathered in deepest rural Cambridgeshire on Saturday the 14th of August to ensure that the National Front's threatened 100-strong demonstration at Oakington Immigration Centre did not take place. The protest, organised by the local branch of Unite Against Fascism with only 3 days' notice, attracted banners from the Trades Council, Amicus and the CWU, as well as local councillors, members of other trade unions, school students, pensioners and more. The presence worked, ensuring that the fascists' proposed gathering didn't take place. Instead of their both did 100 people demonstrating publicly outside the centre where asylum seekers are detained, they were forced into a hurried and tiny skulk through Cambridge. The success of their actions shows that the people of Cambridge have no interest in the politics of the National Front being spread in their town, and the importance of the network of anti-Nazis which have been built up.
And we're almost running out of time. Just before we go, we've got time for a few short stories. Thursday, 26th of August, sees a screening of Afghan Massacre, the Convoy of Death, a controversial film alleging United States complicity in the massacre of 3,000 unarmed prisoners of war in Afghanistan. It tells the story of how thousands of Taliban prisoners who surrendered to the US military were forced into sealed containers and loaded into trucks for transport to, I can't pronounce that, a prison, where many suffocated to death en route. The bodies of the dead and some who survived were then buried in a mass grave at nearby Dashleet Lille. The film showing is at the other cinema, 11 Rupert Street, on Thursday 26th at 9 p.m. £4 concessions.
Okay, a new website lampooning the government's much-criticised Preparing for Emergency handbook has been launched. It parodies the booklet that has been delivered to every household in the country. The website's at, wait for this, www.preparingforemergencies.co.uk and includes the introductory text. In an effort to worry the public and convince them to vote for us again next year, and because George Bush asked us to, this website includes the common sense advice found in the Preparing for Emergencies booklet. Public safety is the government's number 10 priority. The top three are re-election, kissing George Bush's bum, and stopping George Brown becoming Prime Minister. We must be prepared to deal with any emergency, whatever it is, wherever it comes from, and that includes zombie attacks and zombie pirate attacks and killer robots, and both at the same time. Are you ready?
Okay, this Saturday sees the Cardiff Reclaim the Streets. Publicity for the event says they will meet at 2 p.m. and from there move off to a secret location, stop the traffic, reclaiming and transforming the street, and partay.
And there'll be coverage on that on the Indie Media UK site. Recently, there's also been a lot of coverage of the referendum in Venezuela, both on Indie Media UK and several other indie medias around the world. Media activists in Venezuela are currently setting up their own indie media website. While that's in process and while they're making preparations for that, they've been working with media activists around the world to get the messages out and the coverage of the recent referendum, which Chavez won. Just time to say, if you want to contact us, you can email the following address. That's irlnewswire@ziplip.com. That's irlnewswire@ziplip.com. Now we'll be playing out with a 10-minute outro piece, which has been put together, and we'll be back next week.
It's another one of Skidmark Bob's put together pieces, just edited down so it would fit. And we'll see you next week.
Bye-bye.
Finally, we present this musical collage from Skidmark Bob and
We interrupt this program with a special bulletin. America is now under martial law. Shut up. Do not attempt to think or depression may occur. Stay in your home. Curfew is at 7 p.m. Start after work.
And I remember, and I honestly, I think this is the time when I was truly proudest to be American. And I remember turning on the TV and seeing the face of Tom Ridge telling me to go to the Home Depot and get some duct tape and plastic sheeting. And I stood up and I saluted the flag. I had one little tear, like the Indian man did. Remember when you threw the wrapper on the ground and the Indian cried? That's what I was like. I was like, yes, you got it. This is the greatest country. And at first I was like, that's a joke, right? That's a funny joke that the government's telling us to lighten things up a little, like, and that's the joke, and then they're going to go, no, but in all seriousness, this is what you should do. But then that was it, like, duct tape and plastic sheeting. And I was like, are you fucking shitting me? That, why don't I just cover my head and get under a school desk? I mean, what the fuck are you telling me? And I was incredulous. But then they explained it. It's like, look, no. You don't just throw up plastic sheeting and duct tape just haphazardly. You really seal off the plastic sheeting, and then it's two layers of duct tape, people. Duh. Don't let us finish. Please, let us finish. It's two layers of duct tape, okay? And then what that does is if you do it really tight and really, like, specifically like they said to do it, then what that does is that prevents nuclear bombs from entering your skin.
The following song is brought to you by the letters F, B, and I. Who are the people in your neighborhood? In your neighborhood? In your neighborhood? Yes, who are the people in your neighborhood? The people that you meet each day. The nice man living right next door is planning evil acts of war. And those little soccer moms are in their basement building bombs. The widow living down the road and gets her orders by Morse code. The fellow in the cul-de-sac is mixing chemicals out back. Yes, it's every Mr. People in your neighborhood. In your neighborhood. In your neighborhood. Yes, the terrorists are people in your neighborhood. Help us put them all away. Watch out for important clues at the PTA or barbecues. Keep a little secret list in case there's anyone we've missed. 'Cause the terrorists are people in your neighborhood. In your neighborhood. They're in your neighborhood. Yes, the terrorists are people in your neighborhood. They'll be acting so discreet till they're blowing up your street. They're the people that you meet each day.
I'd like to tell you a story here about the government trying to bring me fear and kill the revolution living in my soul. Well, I've done some things I'm proud to say that may have helped the movement have its day, and no federal agents can make me better folk. One day the FBI came to my door and said, son, what are you protesting for? You must like Bin Laden if you don't like war. Well, my middle finger disagrees, and I'm telling you I'm a man for peace, and I don't support anyone who kills the poor. Detective Krause said, I'm just a friend talking to you man to man, as if you wouldn't kill me just for fun. He asked me questions back and forth about terrorist groups and my support, and asked about all this organizing I'd done. He asked for names of my associates and of other political activists, but his little notepad didn't get too full. How silly to think that I would comply with some faceless from the FBI, and the FBI try harder, you stupid fool. idea of vandalism too, all this other stuff I didn't do, and he tried to spin it like it all added up. He said, we got witnesses, don't you know, we can lock you up if we want to, but as you can see, those witnesses were all made up. So the moral of the story is clear to see, we must demand some liberty before this whole wide world gets bombed to bits. If you don't see it, you someday will. You work a job so they can kill, and one day soon you'll see they're full of s***. So people need to start breaking laws, especially laws that are full of flaws, or none of those laws are gonna end in this lifetime. So jaywalk, smoke pot, don't pay rent, and don't give taxes to the government, and everybody else just do fine. I said, folks, it's time to cross the line when they all ignore the picket sign. You gotta be revolutionary. So move along, it's a change in time, and Bush can leave his bones behind, and everybody else just be free.